This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to bite into Nerds gummy clusters? They're fruity. They're tangy. They're gummy. And they're crunchy. Nerds gummy clusters, a union of fruity sweet gummy and tangy crunchy nerds. Unleash your senses. Shop now at nerdscandy.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Rest is Entertainment with me, Marina Hyde.
And me, Richard Osman. Hello, Marina.
How are you, Richard?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm not too bad. I'm in the midst of a very big deadline this week, but this is a lovely little relaxing kind of amuse-bouche.
Yeah, before the horror begins.
Before the horror begins, which is the subtitle of our show this week, because we're talking about Baby Reindeer and Liz Truss.
Yes.
Are we not?
And indeed, AI celebrity chatbots. So really, I mean, the full banquet of...
Some lovely bits in there as well.
Yes, some jolly bits as well.
The AI chatbot thing is something that you drew my attention to this week. And it is one of the most terrifying, weird, sort of dystopian things I've ever heard of in my life. So keep listening for that.
Yes.
Shall we start with Baby Reindeer, though?
Let's start with Baby Reindeer.
It's a huge show. It's on Netflix, starring the comedian and written by Richard Gadd. A true life story about a time when he was stalked and various things that happened after that. And it has been an enormous hit for Netflix, what they call a breakout hit. So big it was even featured on Gogglebox. In fact, when it was on Gogglebox, I kept waiting for them just to be on their phones and Googling. Because you know that's how everyone watches every TV show. Now, you can't watch an old Top of the Pops without Googling where the bands are now. You can't watch any of those American series, the true crime things. You sort of have to wait to the end all you want to do is Google who every single person is, because of course you do. That's what human beings are. That's how we watch television. And drama producers know that as well as anybody. So you have to be so careful at all times if you are trying to hide people's identities that it is impossible to find out who they are.
It's the story of Richard Gadd's stalker and also of his relationship and interactions with a TV producer who was sort of older and more powerful. And without any more spoilers, I won't say anything more than that.
And certainly, yeah, it's become the most talked about show for a long time for a couple of reasons. One, of course, these extraordinary ratings, and I suspect that Jessica Gunning, who plays Martha, will be up for every award going as well. But two, because it does depict real life events and is sort of bled out into the real world this week.
Apart from the cold open, the first words you see on screen are, "This is a true story." Now, that is actually, even within the genre of based on a true story, so that's very unusual to see this is a true story rather than based on a true story. But last week, what has happened is that because the show has become such a massive hit and it says this is a true story at the beginning, people have got caught up in an absolute frenzy of internet sleuthing. The woman who Martha is based on has been identified, you know, and obviously she did a very bad thing. Journalists outside her home, she's suffered huge numbers of sort of threats online, and the TV producer has been misidentified. I don't know about correctly identified, but certainly people have been wrongly identified. Richard Gadd himself has had to issue a statement saying, please stop this sleuthing. This is not what our show was about. Well, we'll come to that. And it is an absolute sort of frenzy. And I've talked to a lot of people involved in shows like this week. And it's a big hot topic in the TV industry at the moment.
Everyone is talking about this show.
And as I say, Netflix made this. There are shows to which it owes certain things. That sort of first-person point of view, it doesn't break the fourth wall. There's a lot of Fleabag in there to some extent, which was also based on an Edinburgh show. Richard Gadd did two Edinburgh shows, we should say, because that might become relevant later. I May Destroy You, which was Michaela Cole's story of her own sexual assault and the attempt to sort of unravel that and a sort of exploration of the idea of consent and all sorts of things like that. Anyway, now both of those were on the BBC, and in the case of I May Destroy You was a co-production with HBO. But there's something called compliance in television.
Yes.
And I mean, all the writers and all the producers and all the executives I spoke to this week were like, this thing that's happened with Baby Reindeer, right, should not have happened. I don't know what Netflix have. You know, maybe if they had a proper compliance department, they wouldn't be able to pay their chief executive $50 million a year. But who knows? In fact, Martha is very close in various ways to the real-life person who stalked Richard Gadd. It is easy to identify. It's been very easy for people to identify her.
It didn't take any actual sleuthing. You can Google certain phrases and it comes up immediately.
Certain phrases are used in the show. Now, you know, some people may say, oh, well, maybe now she can see what it's like to have people sitting outside her house and getting horrible messages over the internet, which is what happened to him. But, you know, I don't feel that criminal justice should happen in that way. If you talk to people involved in things like the BBC, they say, you know, we've got, clearly in this show, in Baby Reindeer, there are vulnerable, both contributors and people on whom it's based, deeply vulnerable people. And you have someone who is, the BBC have a part-time commission executive who deals with these types of issues and would have advised. In something like I May Destroy You, they made sure the defining characteristics of the lead characters were really different so that people didn't say, oh, I wonder if it was this, I wonder if it was that. There is a sort of slight sense with Netflix that it's a bit of a Wild West, and that, you know, now at the moment of his big professional triumph, Richard Gadd is right in the eye of a storm, and so are maybe other people upon whom the show is based or not based.
Well, that's the interesting thing. As you say, there's a very, very serious thing that happens. And Richard Gadd, who, as you say, did the show in Edinburgh and has been very open to people in the industry about who that person was. So people in the industry know who that person
was. Well, that's the difficulty, you see, the complexity of him having put the material out there before in another format.
And obviously that person hasn't been prosecuted, has never gone to trial, but everyone knows who he is talking about. Now, it comes out now and a completely different person is identified, someone who has produced Richard Gadd before, but is definitively not the person in any way. But the person they've cast in that role looks like this other guy. It looks like the guy who's been falsely accused. And it's such a weird, bizarre thing to do. Because this poor guy is now, but he's had death threats and he's had to issue a statement and say it's not me. And it is not him. It's definitively not, because people in the industry know who it is. And it is
Richard Gadd has said it's not him.
Yes, Richard Gadd has said it's not him. Honestly, I think they had no idea it was going to become such a huge
because it arrived sort
phenomenon.
Of without fanfare.
It really did.
But there's something very compelling about that first person narrative that just draws you in. And it is very, very compellingly told.
Yeah, it's sort of unlike anything you've ever seen before in an interesting way. But I can't think they would have predicted it. And so maybe the eye was taken off the
ball. They should have predicted it.
Yeah.
And actually, in terrestrial public service television,
They
would have had to have predicted it. Yeah. And somebody's, you know, neck would be on the chopping block if they hadn't. Because I have huge sympathy with both, much lesser extent with Netflix, who I don't necessarily have huge sympathy with, but with Richard Gadd. Because are we saying now in this era of social media that people can't tell their stories of what happened? People have always told their stories of what have happened to them. And to a large extent, what's happening here is this is TV companies failing in this case to do stuff that they actually wouldn't have never have had to bother with in the era before social media, because it wouldn't have been possible to do this. And these frenzies, that phrase we've used before, that no snowflake thinks it's part of an avalanche, you know, you're writing this, you're sharing this thing, you're saying maybe this thing, you don't realise that, or you don't think, you're not conscious that another 100,000 people have shared that thing as well. Yeah. In an interview to promote the show, he said of the real life Martha, we've gone to such great lengths to disguise her to the point that I don't think she would recognise herself. Well, I'm afraid that isn't the case, and it's certainly not even the case with really quite half-hearted sleuthing on social media that people recognised her.
You don't have to be Colleen Rooney to work out who she is.
Now, I believe that, you know, it is the job of TV companies that are hugely rich and powerful to understand what era they live in. You're telling me Netflix doesn't understand big tech? Well, I think it does. It is big tech, okay, to some extent. It is. And I really think it's extraordinary that it's got to this stage. Lots of stuff wasn't changed. So you're left with Richard Gadd, who I do think, of course, should be able to tell his story.
Oh, this yeah, is not, 100%.
And he's done so brilliantly in it, blah, blah, blah. But these things should have been better disguised. And I don't think this would have happened. I don't think for a minute this would have happened at the BBC. And I don't think it would have happened at ITV. I think that far more care would be taken with compliance. And you don't know how this story is going to end now. And I should say that. You've just got to be so careful. You know, when I was thinking of talking about this, I was thinking about something in my own life that I could perhaps use to shed light on this this morning when we were chatting. And I thought, you know what, I'm not going to do it because even I, and perhaps because I'm in the news media, but I can see round the corners and I could see how people could uncover what I was about to say. And I could see how people could find people who about whom I may talk. And you probably think you're keeping this so vague, I don't actually know what you're talking about. And I suppose that's the point. I am trying to keep it very vague because I can see around the corners. It was their job to see around the corners and they failed to do so. And when you've got a mega hit like that, by the way, this has been like number one in loads of other territories, not
huge.
Just the UK, it's massive. And they didn't particularly promote it. I wasn't like aware of it as one of their big shows that was coming. They should have understood this and they must understand this going forward in an era of social media, which we've been in quite some time now.
Yeah, I mean, so Richard Gadd, who has been around a long time and has won Edinburgh Awards and done, you know, incredibly interesting, very unusual shows at Edinburgh for years and years. And yeah, this should be his crowning triumph. He's taken something that happened to him, something that was clearly very traumatic. He's written, I would say, a fairly great piece of art about it. Yeah. A very unusual, very compelling, searingly honest, too honest it turns out. And it's his huge break. And suddenly he's got the thing that he always wanted. And, you know, judging by the quality of what he's written, the thing that he always deserved as well. And it has led immediately to absolute panic for everybody involved. So it must be a very, very unusual and difficult place for
I mean, it's almost, it's so odd because it's so sort of meta. It's echoed in some ways in the show, within the body of the show itself. And it, you know, as
He sort of goes viral in the show itself. Yeah. And so, yeah, you would think that it was dealable with. I wonder if because it did start as an Edinburgh show and so all these things have been aired already.
Which is such a smaller environment and you're not going to have this great social media.
But perhaps the filmmakers and Netflix were thinking, well, look, this has been pre-legaled. But as you say, an Edinburgh run, you know what? An Edinburgh run and a very minor Netflix show might have similar audiences and similar issues. But an Edinburgh run and the biggest show in the world for a week have very, very, very different audiences. And as you say, that's the point of all the money that is spent on compliance and aftercare and all of those things is just in case. And this is the absolute classic example of just in case.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about based on a true story, particularly via Netflix. Some producers just almost think it's an IP genre in itself. Yeah. It gives a show such a lot of, and obviously sometimes shows like Fargo say this is a true story and it's not. That's a different reason. It's a sort of, you know, it's a trope. It's a sort of fictional meta of something. But in the case of true stories, which Netflix have really tried to corner the market in, they're very sued, even in the US, which is quite weird, where they sort of regard libel like cheap gas as their birthright, you know. First Amendment, I can say whatever I like all the time. Things like that, Inventing Anna. Now that, which is about this con woman, one of those kind of scam artists.
Yeah.
It's often the sort of supporting characters in shows like that, because real life is messy and it doesn't quite fit.
Yeah.
Sometimes those supporting characters become quite caricatured in order to wait, you know, without getting too technical on the writing, to make the story work when you're coming to tell it as a fictional thing.
They have to be a certain sort of engine.
Yeah. Exactly. And because they're a supporting character, a side character, they're kind of there as, not entirely as a plot device, but they're there to help that. Now, a lot of those supporting characters are suing Netflix. And in the case of Inventing Anna, that case is going ahead in the US. Yeah. Again, as I say, it's quite hard to prove defamation in the US because they're kind of allowed to say anything, very much unlike the UK. And Netflix is becoming a very sort of sued entity by people who feel they've been misrepresented in these so-called based on a true story shows.
I like the idea of being a sued entity.
Yeah, there's a lot of these cases that are either going forward or in the pipeline and whether we'll get to hear them or not. But I really think that if you say this is a true story, and there are elements of this story, by the way, particularly involved in the resolution, which are not what happened in the true story.
Yeah, absolutely.
So talking to executives and commissioners and all sorts of different people this week, some of them said to me, yeah, I think even based on a true story would have helped in this.
Yeah.
But it's saying right off the bat, this is a true story.
And the online chatter about it is absolutely, oh my God, this actually happened.
Yeah.
Well, this is real. That's but a real
it's
person.
It's such a, yeah. And I guess the reason I brought this up is that people love a story that was real and they can't believe it. They you know, a huge amount of it is like, oh my God, it blows my mind that this whole thing is true.
Yeah.
But now people are talking about things that happened. If you look at the online chatter about it, they're saying, oh, well, all this sort of stuff happened. And you're thinking, yeah, but that was the bit in the This Is a True Story that didn't actually turn out in that exact way.
Yeah.
And so
there's like a breakdown he has at a gig, which so you would maybe look for that footage, and that footage doesn't exist because, as you say, that's a plot line.
Well, I would say that the sort of legal resolution with the stalker did not occur in the way that it is presented in the show. And that, but people think that the show is complete fact.
Yeah, the denouement of the piece, which is in a court case, which I won't go into details of, but didn't happen. I mean, didn't happen, and people have assumed, of course they've assumed, because it says it's a true story, that it did happen, it's part of the story, and it's not. It's an imagination.
Yes, it is an imagination, and without getting too deeply into it, I think that it is obviously is presented as fact, because you're constantly thinking it's a true story. It's quite tricky, that now, and I think they really are going to have to think much, much harder going forward, because social media is a fact of life, and these companies are definitely not going to look after anybody, the TikTok or Twitter or Instagram or any of the places where people are trying to do their sleuthing.
Yeah, I think that certainly if you were making a show now for any of the streamers or for anybody that is about a real person, then this week your compliance just got tightened by about 8,000%. I think this will be the sort of patient zero of
Netflix compliance. Maybe they've got a big department. I don't wish to speculate, but they're not doing a very good job.
Richard Gadd says in the most 2024 sentence ever, this story is emotionally 100% true. By the way, I absolutely get what he means, because he has taken his trauma, which is genuine, and turned it into a piece of art.
Yeah, and
which
we
is
must,
a genuine piece
people
of art.
Must be allowed to do this, because people have done this forever and they must be allowed to do this.
I would say, though, as a counterpoint, is it a counterpoint that it's really worth a watch?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a little pinch of salt, and please don't do online sleuthing and all the usual caveats. But I do think Jessica Gunning, who plays the stalker, is going to win every award going.
Oh, she's fantastic. She's brilliant.
Performance. It's very interesting, and it's an interesting case of what happens when you suddenly have an enormous hit on your hands. If there's even the slightest crack in the foundations of that hit, then it will open into a chasm, and that I think is what's happened here. I mean, I'm sure they're happy. It's an enormous hit. I think Clark and Well Films make it, and Richard Gadd and Netflix must be fielding an awful lot of calls this week, and rightly so.
Shall we go into a break and then return with the cheerier subject of Liz Truss's book sales?
Let's have a break.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Welcome to the Snapple Market Auditory Experience. Close your eyes. Imagine you're walking into your neighborhood store. You make your way to the back and reach for your favorite Snapple flavor. You can't wait. You take a sip. Whoa, that's a lot of flavor. What flavor are you holding? Now open your eyes and check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavorful Snapple near you.
Welcome back, everybody. Shall we talk about Liz Truss? Don't turn off. We're talking about her book sales.
Don't worry. We're talking about Liz Truss as a publishing story.
Yes, I promise it's fun.
I don't think we'd describe her as a publishing phenomenon, would we, Richard?
Well, I think, yeah.
Phenomenon. Well, everything's a phenomenon. It's a thing.
Yes, exactly. So her book, 10 Years to Save the West, 10 Years to Monetize, her brief moment in number 10. A lot of hoopla about it, serialized in all sorts of places. I've even seen articles this week. I'll go on to one in The Spectator, which is the single worst thing I've ever seen written about the book industry of all time.
Well done, guys.
We will get into it. But yeah, I've seen hoopla saying it was a bestseller. It sold 2,200 copies, which I'm going to go on record as
saying... Is that in the UK? Because it's had a UK and a US release, should say.
In the US, there are charts that go down a long way. It is not in those charts. The UK was the one. It went in at number 70. And by the way, your first week, that's your big week. Week one, after week one on two.
Because that's when all your promotion is happening, everything. And if you can manage to get yourself in the top 10 in week one, then, you know, then there should be a long tail, etc.
But you can build. Also, week one includes every single pre-sale. So every single person who pre-ordered that, that all counts in week one. And that all added up to about 2,200.
We should say it was serialised in the Daily Mail.
All over the media. She was number 17. Number 59, selling 3,300, was the Sticker Dolly Dressing Magical Kingdom.
My daughter's got that.
Oh, well, there you go.
I've got, I haven't got the Liz Truss book, but
And that wasn't even in week one. That's just nicely bobbing along the old Sticker Dolly Dressing Magical Kingdom. So, it's a very low seller. Sold fewer than Matt Hancock's book sold in its first week.
That, by the way, Richard, is at certain weeks of the year, not the weeks you release your books, obviously, but at certain weeks of the year, that is enough to maybe scrape you into the top 10. You might scrape in at 10.
You might scrape into the top 10 hardback nonfiction, which is, you have to keep adding.
Richard, this is Matt Hancock's
words.
Pandemic Diaries. I think that would be doing quite well if he'd done that. It went down to 600 the week after, I think. First of all, it was published by Biteback, and Biteback have got a good sort of, in general, they've got quite good economics. They only paid, by the way, £1,500 for the publication rights to this book. By the way, Liz Truss has only got an American agent, which I sort of love. Like, really? Yeah, I don't know. There's someone called Javelin. Javelin was the code name of Donald Rumsfeld, Secret Service code name of Donald Rumsfeld's wife. And Donald Rumsfeld, former chief of staff, runs this book agency.
Wow. Yeah, you forget he was married to Fatima Whitbread, don't you?
You forget that he doesn't talk about it very much.
Yeah.
So Biteback bought them for £1,500. I think whoever is publishing him in the US, I think they paid £6,000.
Yeah.
I should say, by the way, that I've not seen this discussed. Sorry if it has been, everybody. But I saw in her Register of Members' Interest, where the MPs have to say, you know, what money's coming in and what they've, you know, she's making, by the way, a lot of money from speeches, a lot.
I saw that she was making like 15 grand, which is
no, but sometimes 65 grand, sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, she's got a lot of big ones that she gets, and then sometimes it's a little bit, but it's in London. But, you know, you're going to China and you're getting 65 grand. I can't really.
I mean, that feels like someone deficit funding something, doesn't it?
Yeah, it feels like a lot of things.
I don't think if you're the O2, you're not thinking, let's pay Liz 65 grand. You know we'll make it back on the bar.
I agree on this, but she says in that she's taken 90 hours to write this book. I haven't seen that. That's about 2 weeks' work. Oscar Wilde actually claimed to have written The Picture of Dorian Gray in less than 2 weeks. And I'm going to go out on a limb here. It is better than 10 years to save the worst. Having said that, okay, so Biteback have got this good publishing
90
model.
90 hours?
Yeah.
I mean, it keeps saying it's 100,000 words, which, by the way, it's not, because I looked at the page count.
Yeah.
But that would be, she's writing 1,000
she
words
She claims
an hour.
It's no more. Yeah.
We're aware she can do things quickly. Look at how quickly she crashed the economy.
Yeah, she can do it in a heartbeat like that. She can do it in one speech.
I don't think she's written 100,000 words in 90 hours. God bless.
Well, yeah. So Biteback have this thing where they give you a very low advance.
Yeah.
And if you do well, I think your advice is always, if you can afford it,
Take a low advance. Some
people don't even take one if they are able to. Yeah. Clive James once told me, no, I never take advances anymore because you earn out miles quicker and it's, can you explain that bit to me?
Because So it says she's got a £1,500 advance. I think it would be £6,000 actually, because I think she'll get paid in four chunks. So I think her advance is £6,000.
Okay.
And people were laughing and saying, oh God, Boris got £500,000 and this, that, or the other. The whole point with an advance is it sort of doesn't matter what your advance is. Certainly, if you can write a book in 2 weeks, it doesn't matter what your advance is, because you haven't had to fund yourself for those 2 weeks.
I don't know what Oscar Wilde's advance for The Picture of Dorian Gray was.
And what it means is, if you do get an advance, so Boris gets £500,000 for a book he hasn't written yet, you have to earn that back for the publisher before you see another penny. And so Liz Truss would only have to earn back £6,000 from this book and would then start getting royalties. In fact, I think The Independent quoted someone as saying, she's relying on royalty payments to make serious money from the book. Here's a newsflash. If you sell 2,200 books in week one, you are not going to be making serious money from royalties. It's, again, in this Spectator article I'll get onto, it said that Biteback have already made their money back. I mean, they definitely haven't made it back on book sales. They might have done on serialization, but... They definitely haven't on book sales.
There was a lot of sort of thing like, oh, we've had to reprint because Amazon have run out of it.
Yeah, which are completely different things. So Amazon run out of books sometimes. Amazon work out how many people want to buy a book because Amazon don't want to have extra stock in their warehouses. This is like a really technical...
Are you saying they didn't buy 500,000 copies of Liz Truss's book?
They did not, weirdly.
Wow, Bezos, what's wrong with you? Wake up.
Exactly. And so I'm going to talk about this Spectator article because every bit of it was so bad. It said, Amazon sold out, so they've immediately gone for a reprint. You think, right, no, they haven't gone for a reprint, right? The reprint is quite expensive to print a book, so you print however many you think are going to be sold. I don't know how many they would have done with Liz Truss's book, 20,000, maybe something like that. Amazon say, we're going to sell, you know, 1,000. And when they get towards the end of that 1,000, they will immediately say they're out of stock, and you have to then deliver more to their warehouse. And when they're delivered to the warehouse, it comes back into stock. So it's not that it's sold out. It's not that you're having to reprint because of, you know, incredible
second
demand.
Second run on Liz Truss's book in 14 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. It's because Amazon didn't think it was going to do... Amazon sort of roughly work out how many it's going to sell, never overstock, and then at some point you have to restock them. So hasn't reprinted, and Amazon was immediately back in stock. So The Spectator have written this article about Liz Truss's book sales, which is the most incorrect article I've ever read in my life. It's beautiful in its incorrectness. It starts by saying her book sales may ruffle feathers. That's the tone of the thing throughout, and gets more and more bonkers as it goes on. So I'll just pick out some reasons why it's bonkers. It's talking about how it's number one in political biography on Amazon. Now, Amazon has this brilliant thing, and it works really, really well, where they have a million different subcharts, so everyone can be number one somewhere. I'm always number one in rural life humor. Okay, that's where my book is always.
I saw Liz Truss was number one in political philosophers at one point.
And this article in The Spectator said, it's talking about Rory Stewart, our friend Rory Stewart, and said, Rory Stewart may be displeased to learn that he's like number 90 in political biographies. Yeah, that's because his book has been out for a year.
He'll be crying into his bank balance because that sold a load.
Rory Stewart's book in week one sold 25,000 copies.
Yeah.
That's 11 times more. And has gone on to sell, I think it's up to about 200,000 hardbacks, which is a lot of books, and certainly more than Liz Truss's ever going to sell. The article in The Spectator was also talking about the Prince Harry books. It's even outsold Prince Harry.
Oh my you think, God.
It's the single, that is the biggest selling hardback nonfiction launch of all time. You know, that's like saying last week more people watched House of Games than watched the moon landings, because last week they did, you know, but the moon landings is still the biggest TV show of all time. It was absolutely extraordinary. It was doing everything to say this is a huge hit. And listen, it sold 2,200 copies. Plenty of books would be happy with that, but not books where you've been in the papers all week and, you know,
if we could talk about serialization for a bit, because that is quite interesting. So serialization goes direct to you and it doesn't necessarily count against the event. Everyone's got a different deal, but in general, you would expect that to go to the author. Now, so she would have got a decent whack. I'm trying to think how much. Now, Matt Hancock got £48,000 for his Pandemic Diary serialization, which is also in the Mail. The Mail often gets these because they've got a lot more money than a lot of Fleet Street, and so they might buy these things. But that also included an interview and serialization. And not forget, he had an affair with Gina Lollobrigida, as I insist on calling her real name, Gina Colodangelo. But he had an affair, and I think that was probably quite sort of hooky. Bite Back know how to make their books really newsy and how to get the news lines out. They're very good at that and how you can get lots of coverage. And they did get lots of coverage, but in the end, no one wanted to buy this book. If I'm trying to call what Liz Truss got for a serialization, I was talking to people and they were saying, I think she probably got less than Matt Hancock because he'd had this affair, and I think that was the big thing that people would want to talk about.
Yeah. If only Liz Truss had ever had an affair.
I know. If only she had had an affair, then it would have been something more to read about.
Will we find out in the Register of Members' Interest?
Ultimately, we will find out. Yes, but we won't find out until she registers it, and she could do it either in a few months or later.
Yeah.
Maybe wait till the lack of fuss has died down.
It's a fascinating thing because Hancock suffered from the same thing, I think, which is one of the things about writing a book as a politician. Some books, by the way, politicians' books do amazingly.
Yeah.
Obama's book is an absolute huge seller. Blair's was. Michelle Obama's was a huge book as well. But one of the reasons you would write this book, you know, especially as it only took her 2 weeks, supposedly, is firstly to sort of get your retaliation in first, and secondly, just to boost your profile a bit, so you get to go on all the TV programs, you get to go on Lorraine if you want to, if you write a book. The trouble that she has, and Hancock's got the same thing, is there's no charisma there. There is
no.
There are certain people that if you put them on TV, Rory Stewart was a very good example. You put them on TV, people, there's something about him that people like listening to. And she doesn't have that, and that's no reflection on her. It's just she doesn't connect with people in that way. And so she's had...
I mean, it is a reflection on her. Well, and it was a bit of a stumbling block to doing her job. But
it's okay to not be... It's okay to not be charismatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit rubbish if you're the Prime Minister, but, you know, feels to me like it is one of the things, but...
So there's certain people, when they go on TV to talk about their book, where you go, oh, that's costing you copies. You're not going to sell any more copies from that, I'm afraid. That's, you know, and you can see on Amazon. One interesting thing, if you ever watch something like This Morning or Graham Norton, and someone talks about a book and you think they pitch it particularly well, look at the Amazon chart 4 hours later and you'll see
and
it's gone
right up. Yeah. And there are radio shows like this, things like Start the Week, which will suddenly sort of cut up. There's lots of shows that you wouldn't necessarily think, but
Zoe
there's
Ball,
huge market
the one
movers.
Show. If you go on the one show, you're the first time any of my books went to number one before Thursday Murder Club came out, so just in pre-release, and it went to the first time it ever went to number one is just I launched it on the one show and it just immediately went up there.
We've got to do a deep dive on the one show at some point because be such fun. Please, can we do that? Yes.
I've presented the one show and love the one show.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite jobs in the
You've
world.
Got some very funny stories about the one show set, which I'm going to make you tell.
Excellent.
At least 50% of them.
She's been on this publicity thing, which is not going to sell any books and not really going to boost her reputation either because, you know,
but it's all from the US. You know, she hasn't got a UK agent. She's got someone in like Washington.
Yeah.
Some DC-based agent. They did get her. I don't know if they booked her at CPAC, which was the sort of a conservative conference in America where you saw her, where she ran into trouble because she was on an event with Steve Bannon, who said Tommy Robinson was a hero or something in that vein, and she didn't really challenge him.
And you're saying he's not.
He's not a hero.
He's such a lefty.
But she went on Fox News with that book. She held it upside down. I think she had to be told to get it the right way up. Perhaps she saw her future as a... in that sort of American thing, and maybe someone told her that they can launch her as a personality there. Yeah. I think once they're looking, Javelin Agency, at this particular sales line, they're going to think that it's going to be a harder ask to turn her into...
Like Oasis, I think she may be doomed in America. I don't think it's going to work for her. I was looking at, you know, on Amazon, customers also bought.
Yeah.
And on American Amazon, it was number 7,000 on American Amazon last time I looked, but customers also bought Deception, the Great COVID Cover-Up by Rand Paul. The Great Awakening, Launching the Next Great Resistance by Alex Jones. It's an Jones book. And The Citizen's Guide to Fifth Generation Warfare. Those were the people also bought.
Wow.
But that's what, you know, if that's the pool she wants to smash her feet in, that's where she's looking for money, right?
There is a small part of me, I have to say. And obviously she has done something terrible and whatever, but I don't know. Yes, she should never have been made Prime Minister and all those things. But there is something slightly exhilarating about someone just carrying on and just refusing to be sort of cancelled. And I don't know, it's a sort of a good example for her daughters. I don't know. I know that people, this is maybe as like a real minority opinion, but someone just thinking, I'm actually not going to go and live in shame.
Yeah.
And even though, as I say, what she did was very shameful, but there is something quite sort of inspo about someone just thinking, I'm actually not going to have a terrible, sad life and cry on the floor.
Well, it's very 2024. It is mesmerising. And it's funny that this, you know, a woman who was sort of head of the Liberal Society at university, I was talking to somebody who worked for her and liked her very much indeed. Genuinely said it was a really nice environment. I really liked her. But yeah, she's
some alternatives to that one.
Yeah, listen, I'm sure. Yeah. But it's fascinating to see the dollar that she is chasing now. And to see whether she's going to get that dollar and to see that the shapes that she has to sort of twist herself into to get it. Ted Cruz is quoted on the back of her book in this one. She's talking about how it'd be great if we got rid of Joe Biden.
Can you imagine how little of the book Ted Cruz has? Has he read the title? I very much doubt he's read the title.
He's probably read about as much as Liz Truss has. No, I'm sure she wrote this.
Yeah.
Just very, very, very quickly. It's an unusual thing. I went to an event that Armando Iannucci was talking about, and he was saying that there's a generation now who see becoming prime minister as just a step on the ladder to something else, to step on the ladder to money or whatever. And she's definitely one of them. It's not kind of, you spend out your whole career trying to be prime minister and then you think, I did it. I now retire gracefully and go and watch cricket like John Major.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, perhaps if I'm prime minister, then I can go over to America and talk on the lecture circuit. And listen, it may...
She could easily contort herself. The sheer number of sort of ideological metamorphoses she's kind of been through, she could easily end up being an expert in whatever fifth generation warfare is. I'm not quite sure.
Oh my God.
But she could easily end up doing one of those things.
But whatever we say about it and whatever spin you might see, publishing-wise, it has not moved the dial
No.
At all. Publishing-wise, you'd be happier publishing Sticker Dolly Dressing, Magical Kingdom.
Don't knock it.
I'm not knocking it.
I've got so many of the Sticker Dolly Dressing series. I can't believe I'm doing a plug for Osborne's Sticker Dolly Dressing series, but it's terrific.
But also on the back, because the quotes on the back are from you and from Ted Cruz,
yeah.
Right, of the of that Magical Kingdom thing. Ted Cruz. See, that is a book I do believe he's read.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay, now shall we talk about, and it's going to have some celebrity in it before you think it's just AI celebrity chatbots, Richard.
Yeah, which, as I say, is a subject you introduced me to. I'd say it's haunting. It's funny, but it's haunting.
Yes, it
like
is.
Like ghosts.
Yeah. Okay, now Meta, which is obviously the company that owns various things, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Messenger, they did an announcement very recently, a presentation where they are and where they're going with AI inside all of those apps. And they are sort of rolling out a ChatGPT-style bot across these apps. And it's their large language model is called Llama. I think they're on Llama 3, which, by the way, is nothing like as powerful as ChatGPT-4. However, it does have some advantages, which is that it is free. And it is very, very quick at doing things like pictures. So if you've ever sort of sat there waiting for a picture to come on ChatGPT or whatever, this is really fast. And what they want to do is bring AI into your conversations with your friends, connections, in their social networks, basically. Okay. The bit we're going to talk about today is celebrity related. I must say that I'll give a little bit shout out to a guy called Casey Newton, who writes an email called Platformer, which is really, really good on tech, AI, big tech, AI, whatever. And he's been talking a lot recently about the idea of the synthetic social network. At the moment, we interact with avatars of real people we know or whoever, whatever. So the first iteration of this product, the celebrity chatbot, was weird and misconceived and odd.
That doesn't sound like Meta.
Yeah, exactly. They paid some rumors of like maybe $5 million to various celebrities. I think there were 28 of them. People like Kendall Jenner, Snoop Dogg, and Naomi Osaka. I can't remember who all the others were.
Mr. Beast was one.
And but the product was weird and it was basically off. Like, it was Snoop Dogg, but he wasn't called Snoop Dogg. He was some sort of Dungeons and Dragons games master. Kendall Jenner was just like some random LA friend.
And so as a actual human being, you could
interact. See them talking. It seemed like you were interacting with them.
Yeah.
But you weren't, and it was all AI. No one really cared, by the way. No one cared. Like, nobody, they didn't have any followers. These things. I think even the Snoop Dogg one, he's got like unbelievable millions on all his other platforms, and he got like 80,000 of this, but they were just paid to do it. Anyway, now Meta is going to do something completely different, which is they're going to train chatbots in the way that the participating celebrities speak, and then a chatbot version of that celebrity will interact with the fans. So you can be with Kendall Jenner in your DMs and talking to her. You're not really talking to her, but it will seem very like you are talking to her because they're going to train them in all the already. I mean, as we've seen, they can create a you from a tiny amount now. I mean, you can give them. Microsoft unveiled this sort of AI assistant thing the other week, which is called Vasa, V-A-S-A, and you can give them a tiny bit of audio and one picture, and then you can see this person speaking.
So we got AI to do the intro to this show. Shall we take a listen to ourselves and see if we are better in AI than in reality?
Let's do it.
Hello and welcome to The Rest is Entertainment. I'm Rich Osman.
And I'm Marina Hyde.
What are we talking about in today's show, Marina?
Well, today, Richard, we are going to be talking about a brand new software which can clone our voices.
Sounds fascinating.
It is fascinating, if not terrifying, when it do our jobs even better than us.
I went slightly Belfast for 1 second.
A little bit.
On
Irish.
The word going.
Yeah.
But that I think that's terrifying.
I think useful.
Yeah,
I would
say. Just sit down and have a cup of tea.
That's peculiar, isn't it?
Well, this is why I tell you that podcasts are very vulnerable to AI.
Yeah. I tell you what AI doesn't like, dead air.
No.
So absolutely, we're running on from each other's sentences there.
Yeah, I mean, I could learn a lot from it. The reason I think this is terrifying, there's actually a really interesting guy, and he died this year, and he's a sort of cognitive philosopher. He's a guy called Daniel Dennett, and he wrote this fascinating essay that came out maybe last year, and it was called Counterfeit People. And his theory is, he's a really eminent and amazing philosopher, he wasn't it, and that these are digital artifacts that are being created, which he thinks can destroy our economies, they can destroy all our freedoms, they can permanently...
That's Liz Truss's job.
Yeah, exactly. 10 years to save the West, she should have written about this. But he thinks that the creation of fake people is an immoral act, and it is a form of social vandalism that should be punished by law. And he gives the example of money. Mm. Counterfeit money, there's a reason why every single society on this planet has really draconian laws against counterfeit money, including passing it on, as in, you know, and I suppose in counterfeit, you might say retweeting them or reposting them, okay, or whatever it may be. And he feels that it's because money is a sort of similar idea. All the bonds in our society depend on that kind of trust. And if you don't have that, then things fall apart really, really quickly. He said, look, we could, all these fake people that you're now seeing online, yeah, we could watermark. It's very easy for them to sort of effectively watermark it. They can work out with code very quickly what's real and what isn't. Instead, what we do is say, oh my God, that's so weird. You know, oh my God, it is like Kendall Jenner, but it's not quite like her. And we're sort of fascinated by it. We are really walking ourselves to our own slaughter, because his point is, okay, if you look at someone like Narendra Modi in India, he is obviously, to win votes, he's got AI versions of himself speaking in all the different regional languages, which is very helpful to him. But this is a form of political manipulation that is happening right now.
Yeah.
And Daniel Dennett's idea is, you know, if this happens and these really clever counterfeit people come, and you can't hardly tell, and once we start seeing these meta celebrity chatbots, these are, you know, celebrities are really always the sort of soft launch of all this, yeah, stuff. And as we can see in India, it's already happening. Lots of other places in politics, political manipulation is already happening via AI, and it's going to in the elections coming. But we'll be manipulated, we'll become paranoid, we'll become ultra skeptical, like we won't even believe true things. And yeah, then you become apathetic or kind of terminally unmoved. And that is that is breaking down as a society. And then anyone can ride roughshod over you. So it may start with chatting about makeup in your DMs with Kendall Jenner, but it really quickly ends up with very, very bad political actors taking control of countries, economies, freedoms, all sorts of things like that.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Listen, let's concentrate on the Kendall Jenner stuff, yeah, though, for now. Essentially, you can DM Kendall Jenner. Kendall Jenner's bot. You can just have a conversation with her,
yeah,
for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, if, yes, you wish, in her voice.
All the time. And you may prefer to be talking to these synthetic celebrities, because we're all admirers or fascinated by or something by celebrity, captivated in various different ways, than having normal interactions. And they think that, you know, people will want to bring them into their own chats so that they become a sort of participating character,
oh, that's quite
in
fun,
your group chat.
That is actually, yeah, quite fun.
Shut up, fake Kendall Jenner, yeah, on your WhatsApp group.
Yeah, on my fantasy football league
group. Let's put her in our group and add her in, oh, and just see what she starts
should
saying.
Should we do that? And, yeah, then next week we'll discuss what
we'll see what her contribs were.
What's up? No, but then we're, as you say, then the world ends.
Yeah,
I don't want to be
really
the person
quickly
who... yeah, exactly. Oh, I need to read that Liz Truss book. There's a TikToker called Karen Majori who did exactly this. She was one of the first people to do it. She's got an AI version of herself that interacts with her fans. And she was saying, no, the reason I'm doing it is because I want to cure loneliness. This was her thing.
Oh,
I think
Karen.
Also she might have wanted to monetize it as well. I don't know.
But maybe she made a couple of quid.
She wanted to cure loneliness, and she thinks that someone talking in an AI version of herself will do that, that's a healthy way to increase your social circle. And she said she's done that by working with the world's leading psychologists, brackets, citation needed.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you can see why all celebrities are going to do this.
Yes.
Because it's honestly...
Many of them don't even run their social media anyway. So you're, yeah, already in a version of a synthesized interaction, whether or not you even realize it. This, yeah, is the next step in that.
Because at the moment they're having to pay an assistant to be them.
Yeah.
And sooner or later they won't have to pay anyone to be them. But there's companies, Forever Voices, I think, are the ones who do Karen Majori's stuff. And they will own part of your likeness and your soundness as well for a very long time. They pay you for it. But, you know, they're going to own who you are, and as you say,
so once, you don't get final approval.
I assume they must do in the contracts and what have you. But you're certainly
signing
a deal.
But the thing is, you can't listen to.
Yeah.
If she could be interacting with 100,000 people at any given moment,
well,
in which case she's not going to approve anything.
It will shock you to learn that within a month, they were saying, hey, we do need to make some tweaks because the chats were getting too erotic. I think, oh, they were surprised by the fact that the thing that people were using it for was to try.
Who can predict these things, Richard? Who, yeah, can predict that humans
who
would do this thing?
Can predict that? And listen,
did she cure loneliness?
Hold on, let me check on the phone. It's still going now.
Pending.
But apparently she's helping.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the charts here. But you would think the world-leading psychologists would know what they're doing, wouldn't you? Listen, two points of view, and people at home can take one or the other. So Daniel Dennett essentially says this sort of, these parasocial relationships where you're talking to someone who isn't real and we can't trust what we're seeing and we can't trust the people we're talking to will lead to the end of civilization. But Mark Zuckerberg says it's all about entertainment and it will feel fun and familiar. So listen, six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Just one of the worst people alive. Because the other thing about these technologies is that they, unlike nuclear weapons or other sort of known harmful technologies or potentially harmful technologies, these have an organic quality in that they can reproduce. So these kind of AIs can reproduce and potentially become, as we've discussed on various different occasions, much more powerful than they originally intended and more powerful, by far more powerful than their creators.
But I will say this to people, you know, on their dog walk or, you know, driving the kids to school or anything like that. It's all going to be okay, isn't it?
Well, I hope so. Yeah. I mean, as I've said before, I think podcasts are very vulnerable to this technology because it'd be very, very easy to create AI podcasts.
You think?
Yes. Very, very easy. And I think we'll be seeing that we already are. And someone will come out and say, that hit was, by the way, entirely AI. I really think that is almost imminent.
Music, for sure. I can't believe there hasn't been an AI number one single. Yeah, that feels like the easiest thing in the world. Some art collective putting together a song just by AI.
If they're making money, they will think, I don't want to say anything. And there are always those things where you're like, oh my God, that was a model and she wasn't really singing. You know, we had those
Milli Vanilli.
Yeah.
That was the first real AI there, wasn't it?
Yeah. What about Black Box, Ride on Time? Was she maybe not the actual singer?
She was not the singer. Yeah. That was, Loretta Holloway.
Yeah.
Loretta Holloway, I think, was the original
Loretta
singer.
Loretta was? Yeah. Was she? Okay.
And it was an Italian model was the...
She looked amazing.
So we've had it for years, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
But yes, I think this is of a different order.
But yeah, we're definitely going to add Kendall Jenner to our group chat. So do you know on our group chat?
Yes.
Gary Lineker is on it.
Yes.
Do you think it's really Gary Lineker?
No,
because a lot of the stuff he says.
That is just a bot.
Because we'll say something like, what time are we recording? And he'll say, great goal by Jeff Schlupp there against Fulham. You're like, I don't think that's... doesn't seem right.
They're working on it. They're perfecting the software.
Yeah. But we're real. So that's the...
We are at this stage real. Yes. And we'll never interact with anyone for synthetic versions of ourselves.
Recommendations. Listen, despite what we said, I would recommend watching Baby Reindeer. It's a challenging watch, but I think it's a very, very interesting piece of TV.
I think it's completely compelling. And I would recommend that if you haven't already seen it along with many millions of others.
And if you can pick up Liz Truss's book anywhere in Oxford.
Pick it up and then put it back down.
I'm going to count the words.
Yeah.
Listen, we're back on Thursday, aren't we, for a question and answer
edition. Back on Thursday. Keep your questions coming to the email addresses, therestisentertainment@gmail.com.
And I promise it's us and not an AI version
of
us.
We're so faulty that you will be able to tell that it is
you'll know
the
it's
real
us.
Thing.
Yeah, exactly.
See you then.
The moment we're slick, you'll know it's AI.